possible. You will learn that and so much more, and you'll probably be fascinated from this point on. And of course, if you know somebody that's interested in this kind of thing, let them know or give them this book as a gift. It's incredible. 212-209-2950. Ask for the Car Hacker's Handbook, and a pledge of $55 will get you that.
It's really interesting. I mean, as people listen to this program know, I'm not really into cars at all. But just to know what kinds of things are possible, what's coming, what's going to be possible, what is now possible that we should make impossible, a book like this really shows the way. And, you know, as we've said, if it's from No Starch Press, we know it's a good book, even though it's not out yet, so we haven't read it. 212-209-2950. Call and get your copy or go to give2wbai.org. Just as we said, a limited number of copies available, so act now.
While supplies last.
I wasn't going to put it that way, but
yes,
we can.
But it's true. 212-209-2950. Really fascinating material, and I can't wait to learn more about this myself, because there are things that I'd like to be able to do in cars that I drive. For instance, a little thing like this. I'd like to change the Fahrenheit to Celsius in a digital thermometer. I'd like to change the 12-hour clock to a 24-hour clock. I know it's possible. The dealer says, no, we can't do it. It's not allowed.
But I'll sell you a tool that's $800 that'll help let you do it.
They haven't made that offer yet, but I think they just don't have the imagination.
Oh, no. I'm an aftermarket guy. Yeah, you got to talk to the dealer about that.
Uh-huh. All right, we're at the end of our first hour, but we're on for 2 hours tonight. Yes, lucky listeners. Here at WBAI New York, the Personal Computer Show is not on. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be talking about the Apple controversy and maybe taking some phone calls in just a little bit.
You know who else has been pissing me off lately? Google. You guys know Google? A couple of people have heard of it. The rest of you guys are like, Google? What's Google? Google it and find out. Friends, the only way to learn anything anymore is to Google it. And that was fine at first because things were simple. It was like Google was my friend, right? I'd be like, hey, Google, what do you know about this? And Google would be like, well, Ben, here's what I've got for you. Things were simple then. Google was my friend. But somewhere along the line, things changed, and Google turned into that annoying friend who will never let you finish a story because it keeps interrupting you, trying to guess the ending before you can get to it. All right, now I sit down, I type the letter P, and Google is like, Pacific Ocean! Is it Pacific Ocean? Is it? Is it pacifier? Is it pack rat? Is it peanuts? Is it piss bag? What is it? I need to know what it is right now! Tell me what it is right now! I can't wait anymore! I end up learning about stuff that I'm not interested in, because Google is so suggestive. I typed in take flight. 3 hours later, I'm an accidental ornithologist, having inadvertently studied birds for the better part of an afternoon. Now I'm Googling binoculars, planning a family bird watching trip. I was trying to book a flight to Cleveland. Thanks a lot, Google. What am I supposed to do with all this bird knowledge?
Oh, yes. The words of Ben Bailey on Google here on WBAI, off the hook. We're here for another hour, and we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. But I just want to reiterate what we did in the last hour. We were talking about car hacking and offering an incredible book that you can pledge for. Pledge of $55, 212-209-2950. Learn all about car hacking, how you can hack your car, how other people can hack your car, what cars are capable of, what silliness has been programmed into them, and lack of security, and all sorts of things like that.
How to make it better or how to make it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while. It's something that is going to keep coming up, and I'm sure there are going to be all sorts of scandals and chaos in the future, and people will refer back to this book and to the conversations we've had.
So it's now's the opportunity to get this book and be ahead of those conversations. 212-209-2950. Your pledge of $55 or more, if you want, can get you the Car Hacker's Handbook. And we want to again thank Bill, who we just spoke to for an hour, for donating these books. Your $55 go to the radio station. They go to keep us on the air. They go to keep all the other programs on the station on the air. As Bill said, no other radio station in the country will interview him about this topic We will, and we can't do it without your support. 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
But you know what other radio stations will do? And TV stations and networks and all sorts of things. They will cover stories like this, but they'll get it wrong. And they'll talk about all sorts of fear-mongering aspects to it all. And that leaves people uneducated and ignorant. And that's exactly what you will not be if you read this book. And hopefully if you listen to this radio show. 212-209-2950. Pledge for the car hacking book and learn. A ton.
Emmanuel, you know why one of the big reasons that a lot of the other radio stations and news sources will get it wrong when they talk about things like car safety and car vulnerabilities, because they are beholden to, say, a company that sells a car and that advertises the car on their network and that pays them a lot of money and that would not like it if they said bad things about their brand of car. We don't do that here at WBAI, do we?
No, there are no car commercials on WBAI airwaves.
No car commercials, no commercials for anything else, actually, because we don't take money from interests like that in order to advertise their stuff. What we do to stay on the air is we ask you, the listener, for your support. This is the only thing that has kept us on the air for decades, and it's the only thing that can continue to keep us on the air and keep us free to say what we want about what we want and to do it in the way that we've done for so long. So call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and you can pledge $55 for the Car Hacker's Handbook. You can pledge for something else. You can pledge any amount you wish and show your support and help us keep doing what we do.
Yes, we are a strictly community radio formatted entity here in the middle of the FM dial. I would say it's the middle. It's close to the middle.
It's
a little
about
bit
as middle as you can get.
One way or the other. But suffice to say, that's where we are. And this is not just about giving pledges and getting items in return. This is really a concrete contribution to this institution coming at you over the radio or online. There's a lot of changes, a lot of exciting things going on here, but we need your support to keep that active and to maintain a lot of the technical and organizational things that keep this place thriving. You can be a part of that, so please, if you're interested in this, if this book is interesting to you, if maybe you just feel like giving a little bit of support because you enjoy Off the Hook or have for some time. Now's the time that you can give a little bit back for whatever you've gotten out of our program and support more of that into the future here at WBAI.
Bernie, any words from you down there in Philadelphia?
Well, this project with the Bill Pollack's been working on it, No Starch Press, has enthused me enough to go out and buy a copy. I can't pledge while I'm on the show, but if not, I'll buy the book directly from No Starch Press. It probably, I don't know. Do we have any idea if all the copies that were donated have been pledged for yet?
I cannot say for sure. I don't have online access to that bit of information yet, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we don't have a tally.
Bernie,
yeah.
if you want to pledge while you're on the air, you can go to give2wbai.org.
That's
and do
right.
It that way.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Although, I don't know if we like distracted radioing, so maybe don't.
I think actually a few of us in this room were so interested by the book that we were a little bit nervous about not getting copies ourselves. So phones were passed around, and I think if it runs out, it might be because of us. So you better hurry up and give a call.
But you can still pledge. You can pledge any amount.
I'm intrigued that I can actually get all the codes out of my car for about a $20 ODB2 Bluetooth device. I can look on an Android phone, which my BlackBerry will run Android apps. This is an amazing opportunity for you to imagine. You're spending tens of thousands of dollars for a car, and you're basically buying a bunch of computers in a moving platform, and you have no access to any of the computers. That's ridiculous. It shouldn't be that way. You should be able to control, or at least know what's going on with these computers that you just paid a lot of money for, whether it's a new or used car. So one last effort on this, please call 212-209-2950. Support the radio station for $55. We'll send you a great gift that was given to us by No Starch Press. But this is a very current topic. It's fresh, hot off the press, and you'll definitely be hearing more about it. Do we have some more stories to cover today?
Yeah, we sure do. But I just wanted to say, if for some reason you're not interested in this, you can still call and pledge. There are all kinds of other pledge levels, all kinds of other premiums, and you can become a WBAI buddy. Just call 212-209-2950, ask for more information on that, and believe me, every little bit counts. Every little bit keeps this station going. And when we're able to have conversations like this, where we talk about new technology and things that are not being covered in the mass media. All right. So one thing that is being covered quite a bit in the mass media, but I'm not so sure they're getting it right either, is the whole Apple story. Now, I wasn't here last couple of weeks, and I have not been extremely focused on the story, but I think I have a basic idea of what it's all about. But does anybody feel confident enough to kind of give, without injecting your opinion into it, what it is that Apple is facing with this whole give us access to somebody's phone controversy? Mike?
Yeah, so we talked about this last time we were on the air a bit, but Apple produces a very popular line of cell phones, our audience may know, and you can lock the cell phone so you can't turn it on without entering a password. And apparently you can configure these phones so that if you enter the wrong password 10 times, the phone wipes itself and you can't get into it ever again at all because the data is gone. One of these phones was owned by the man in California who shot a bunch of his coworkers, and the phone is owned by his employer, the county government, and the FBI claims they would really like to get into this phone because that they claim there's some investigative need for that. Am I doing a good job of not
so far,
injecting
no,
my
you,
opinion?
Yeah, so
this
far
is
you're
really
doing good.
All right,
yeah.
And it's a tough case for them. I'll just so, add my opinion.
So they claim they really want to be in this phone, and what they would like, and they don't want to just, you know, guess passwords because if this feature is enabled and they guess the wrong thing 10 times, then they won't, you know, the phone will be wiped and they won't be able to get in anymore. So what they would like Apple to do is not what Apple has already done, because Apple's already done that, which is provide a copy of all the backups of the phone that they have, and just everything that Apple actually has in its possession has already apparently been provided.
Mm-hmm.
But the government would like Apple to go a step beyond. They would like Apple to create a special version of the software that runs on the phone so that the FBI can try as many passwords as it wants. It can, without the phone being wiped. They want to be able to try them as quickly as the hardware will allow. Normally, if you have a device and you guess the wrong password enough times, it will slow down the rate at which you can guess so that you can't just guess all the passwords. But the FBI would like to be able to guess all the passwords. And they would like Apple to write this software for them. They would like Apple to install it on this device for them. And the other thing the FBI wants is they don't even want to type in all the passwords. They want to be able to enter the passwords in remotely from a computer or something.
Okay, that's a pretty good summation, I think. Now, if I understand correctly, if you were to hand me your iPhone right now...
I have a different phone, which operates more or less the same way.
I got you to say what kind of phone you don't have. Yeah, no one in here has an iPhone.
I mean, right? I'll say the name of my phone if you think it's interesting to our listeners. I don't know.
Well, okay, the point is...
The point is he's got it, yeah.
If you had an iPhone, and tell me if this is true of iPhones in general, and you handed me your iPhone... And I tried to guess your password 11 times. I'd wipe your entire phone?
Well, after the first few tries, there would be increasingly long delays. Mm-hmm. I understand they're on the order of hours. So it would take you quite a while to wipe an iPhone that
way. So I could really annoy somebody just by borrowing their phone for a minute and trying to guess the password a few times. They wouldn't be able to even use it for a couple of hours?
I don't know the details of the slowdown sequence, but there is one. So I think, there's the first delay is short, and then it goes to the order of minutes, then to the order of hours before the phone gets wiped.
Okay. And there is data that has already been backed up to the cloud. iCloud is what they call it.
Yeah.
Do you know how often that happens?
This is one of the controversies in the case, because apparently the regular backups stopped sometime before this shooting. And what the San Bernardino County people, I don't know exactly which agency did, is I don't know if it's the law enforcement or the agency that the shooter worked for who owned the phone, but yeah. Anyway, someone reset the backup password, which apparently is a thing you can do on the computer, so that no more backups could take place, rather than just trying to bring the phone into somewhere with Wi-Fi and have a backup automatically take place, which would maybe give the latest data without all these shenanigans.
So wait, if they hadn't changed the password, then the next backup would have taken place and they would have had all the information that they want now.
That's not a certainty, but it's a thing that seems likely.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have any disagreements or problems with this scenario so far?
Ethical, moral problems, or?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of ethical problems with what happened, obviously. Barney, that drive what you understand?
I think Mike did a pretty good summary of the situation, and but there's a lot of misinformation, I think, that's been inaccurate and incomplete information that's being reported on.
Well,
on
we're going to get to all the misinformation. There's plenty of time for that. Kyle, do you have something?
Well, I mean, it's accurate to my understanding. There was one thing that I heard that was brought up, which I think is interesting. It was a question that was asked during a hearing about this by, I believe, a congressperson who inquired about the ability of the FBI to mirror the phone so that they can start over the 10 tries infinitely. And I think Apple responded in the affirmative that was an alternative to breaking this system, is them competently mirroring the existing installation and whatever data is there as a backup, so that after 9 tries they can start over. So that's not really something you're hearing in the media about this, because the FBI has this angle of wanting Apple to explicitly do this work for them, when there are other techniques than breaking this particular system.
And that's the huge thing about this case. It's not about finding out anything about this one person who used this phone, because that person is dead, and we don't really need to know any more than that to effectively close this case. But what they want is the ability to do this from now on, to whatever phones they like.
Well, they say, no, it's just... Mm-hmm. So, yes, Kyle.
And what has been brought up in the media in the context of using that tool that they're hypothetically being forced to create, is that it will then become a process, a tool that is used with some regularity, thus opening it up to it being exploited as a routine process that is subverted somehow, right? So you set up that infrastructure for that. You have administrative people within whatever agency getting access, and up to and including foreign actors, say, and one of the representatives of the hearing brought this up, but like state actors or people in organized crime and so on can then use these tools if they're exfiltrated from whatever secure place they can be stored. And I think Apple was in their they really did articulate the defensive side of that, because the government is basically like, the reason customers create their passwords and stuff is because Apple can't guarantee that. And so the government's saying, okay, break that, and then we'll take care of all of that in a place that you yourself can't guarantee exists. There is no secure place to keep the tools for this, just like there's no place for Apple to keep all of everyone's passwords for this. So it was a good argument.
And okay. Well, that's interesting. I think we should get into that a little bit later as far as the hearing that took place. But based on all this, based on what I'm hearing, first of all, if I imagine if any of us knew what the password was, we wouldn't have any trouble with the password being given to the authorities to look into this, right? I mean, if I said, hey, the password's 2600, yeah, go ahead, go crazy, you know. It's
how good friends are you with this guy?
I don't know. I'm just saying, if I knew that there was a back door, if I knew there was a way, it's not a question of people saying, oh, you have no right to this to look into this person that obviously was guilty of horrible things. And if Apple has the ability, and this is where I think I might be ruffling some feathers here, but I think this is a statement that I've come to based on what I've heard. If Apple has the ability to get access to this phone, then I think they should give them access to that phone. Does anybody have a problem with that? I imagine you do.
I mean, How do you define has the ability, I guess, would be the question.
If they are able to sit in a room and either punch a few buttons or write a few words, write a few bits of code, then in my view, if they have that ability, they've already done it. Because it's not hard for them to accomplish this. They have access. And basically what we're doing right now is believing them when they say, we haven't done this, we don't want to do this. And I'm a little bit suspicious that all of this is a big Apple PR push, that they simply want to say, we protect our users more than anything, and we hold privacy to be completely something that we will never violate. But I think if they have the ability to do this, then somewhere in a back room someplace, they have already done it, or they will do it when it suits them. And that's what worries me.
But then if they have the ability to do this, how does that ability to do this end up as, say, evidence you could present in court if it's not legal for them to do this?
Well, the thing is, the authorities are finding ways to bypass those annoying little requirements and either get the evidence they want illegally or simply engage in some kind of operation based on illegally obtained evidence. I don't think that's really going to be something that people are going to waste too much time
soul-searching
about there.
I think if we've all already got it in our heads that, okay, if you use, say, Gmail, mm-hmm. Then Google as a company has the ability to, if they're served the proper warrants, to just let any investigators they want into your Gmail to flip through it and see
what's
in there.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, it's a good example. Gmail will say, we don't read our users' email. Of course they do, because they give you ads based on what's, maybe computers are reading it, maybe humans aren't actually looking at this, but you know they have the ability to read your email. And if they say, we don't do that, great, believe them. Believe Google if you want, believe Apple if you want. But you know they have the ability to do this. So that's why, you know, if it was something where, I'm trying to think of a good analogy to this, maybe PGP is the best one. If somebody went to the people that that run PGP or GPG or whatever and say, we want to read these messages, the answer they're going to give you is, we can't. It's not possible. We can't just crack the code because we designed the system so that we can't crack the code. Apple's not saying that. Apple's not saying we can't do this. They're saying we won't do this, which means they can do this, which to me means they have done this.
No, they're saying they can't do they cannot break the password.
Mm-hmm.
They're being asked to create a tool that makes it easier to break the password.
Right, which means they can create that tool.
Like Mike was talking about the slowdown and the attempts being interrupted after 9 or 10 or whatever that was.
Right.
It wipes the data that's local to the phone. That process is what they're being asked to break.
Understood.
It's not necessarily the password itself.
Right.
And I think they explained that the password itself creates the encryption key or is a part of the key generation in that whole part of the software.
That means a clever Apple engineer someplace who does not agree with company policy and has the appropriate access can do this on their own.
But they can't do it easily without the tool
mm-hmm.
that eliminates the slowing down and the wiping feature. And, I mean, you can brute force things. There are tools out there that you can use to brute force things, but without.
Yes.
But it's a lot harder if that is not disabled.
Well, I think somewhere they have access to the code that will slow, that will bypass the slowing down when you guess an invalid password. I think that can be bypassed as well with the appropriate access.
Right, but it's a custom version of the operating system that would then be generated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was also an argument that was made, that you are then signing a version of the operating system for the government.
Right.
But there's no guarantee the government is going to be able to secure that copy of the operating system.
But do you think it's possible that Apple and the higher echelons of Apple, they have something like this designed so that they can, whenever they feel like, access certain devices? I don't think so. I don't think they're that shady, but I do think it's physically possible.
I mean, so look, we know that Apple is working. Teams within Apple are working to make it harder and harder for them to be able to do this. And to their immense credit,
as a feature,
the next version of the phone, the specific requirements asked for here won't work anymore. what is truly frightening to me about this government request is that they are saying to Apple, you must weaken the security of your own product. As we talked about in the first hour, security of computer products is already way too weak. For the government to mandate companies to design software that is weaker than they know how to make is a terrible precedent, and one that I think we really ought to stop.
Oh, I agree with that, absolutely. And they are, in fact, requesting that, even though they're saying that they're not requesting that. It's quite obvious that if they do manage to do this, I mean, Cyrus Vance has a whole room full of phones that he wants to get into right here in New York City. And I imagine every district attorney around the country has a similar story. So this is a very bad precedent. But what I'm trying to do is simply not believe a corporation at face value that they have not already done this, that they don't have the ability, and that that we should just believe when they say we don't want to do this, that they have not already done it. I will be happy when I hear them say it's not possible. And you're saying the next version of the phone might have that ability where it's not possible?
I don't want to play iOS forensics expert on the air because I'm not one, but the claim is that it's even harder in the next version of the phone. They produced, as part of their reply brief, an estimate for how long it would take them to make this software. It was something on the order of a team of six engineers for a month, which is... you know, if Apple has six engineers working for them, they could get it. But it's not the kind of thing they would just do on a whim.
Right. It's not. Sorry. It's not good for their bottom line. It's not their everyday business model. That's why I'm saying I don't think they care. I'm not saying I trust them not to do it. The engineer is not there. Like you're saying, it isn't possible someone there has an interest or has done this just for a proof of concept. But I don't think they care because it's not – their bottom line is what they care about.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Apple is not a governmental agency. Google is not a governmental agency. These are private businesses, and ultimately they're there to make a buck. And the key to the security of any system lies largely in how it was designed. That depends on why it was designed. They're designing a system to provide a device to their users that will do what their users want. If the government is stepping in and saying they have to do that differently – what's the process for that? How is that being overseen? How is that decision being made, enforced, allowed to happen? If you run your own little locksmith shop and the government walks in one day and says, you have to give us a copy of every key you sell somebody, that would be seen as overbearing. That would be seen as overreaching. But it's essentially what's happening at
Apple.
It
would be seen that way if you found out about it. What if they did that and told the locksmith, you can't tell anybody, you know, like one of these letters that they send out to people saying you can't tell anybody you got a letter. There could be companies, in fact, I'm sure there are companies, where they are working with the government and they've been told, don't tell anybody that you're working with the government. Now, Apple is different because they're objecting to this loudly, and that's admirable. But again, in the back of my mind, I have all these doubts that, well, okay, is that really what's going on? What is actually possible? And again, you mentioned governments. There are governments all over the world. So what one government does, another government will do something even worse. So once you start working with a government, there's no end to what it is they can control. So it's a very, very dangerous precedent.
But trying to look at it from the position of Apple, a company that wants to make money, I think it was a very good move for them to publish the letter they did that we read last week on the show, decrying the government's request and talking about why they don't want to do it, why they won't do it, because that in itself was, as you said, a good PR move. That in itself is a move that will increase Apple shareholder value, and that's what they're there to do.
One thing that was brought up was this idea that their product is predicated on some level of trust with their consumers, and that another important distinction in that is this this international appeal, the fact that this is a multinational company, and that for them to create this for phones here would set a precedent internationally, or create a product internally or that is desirable. And it's already the case that they work with government agencies from around the world. I mean, this whole case, I think the first call they said in the hearing this week that they received, their government relations response team received a call at like 2 a.m. on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And they were active on this like immediately after. Of course, they're saying that in the hearing to appear diligent, but I believe, you know, they correspond with a lot of things. The distinction is that they relate and coordinate with the government where they have to, e.g. subpoena, but they, I think, are drawing a line here, and that's a lot of what's being thrown around in the media, is this line being drawn. And another distinction or reason this is a bit contentious is the way it looks. I mean, this is a terrorism case, so it sort of, the language and the attitudes around it, it makes it, there's a lot of attempts, I think, in around this that are making them out to be a bit, you know, like not patriotic, but that I think is myopic. It's short-sighted because other entities around the world will want more access if our government is given more tools or more access. It's, and if they can't get it legally, they're going to try to find it.
They're labeling it terrorism, I think, just to get their way. It's mass shootings all the time, yep, in the United States. For some reason, that one was considered terrorism, and others are not considered terrorism. I don't want to get into that because it will just be talking for hours about that. Bernie, I know you wanted to get in on this.
Yeah, to answer your question that you asked like about 10 minutes ago, can Apple provide a means to bypass, to brute force the phone, so that the FBI can gain access to the content? Yes, Apple has already admitted they can do this, and they basically provided a price quote for this in response to the court order. The court said that Apple could had to respond within so many days. I had to either comply or respond within 10 days and say within, I think, 5 days, and explain if this was an undue burden. And Apple provided a quote of, like, basically how many engineers and how many person hours it would take to do this, and that they said that they would have to build a SCIF, which I thought was really interesting. You rarely hear about this in the public media. A SCIF is an acronym for, it's used by government, by intelligence agencies. A SCIF is a secure compartmentalized information facility. It's basically a vault where work can go on inside this vault, and no information can pass out of the vault. It's without, you know, authorization. It's like, it's secure against a tempest eavesdropping, and it's a secure facility. CIA operates them, NSA operates them all around the United States.
Yeah, I bet they have a floor panel that you can climb out of.
Well, yeah, it would be nice if there was such a thing, but no, these are really, and they cost tens of millions of dollars to build a SCIF, apparently. They're really expensive.
Yeah, we have one.
And Apple has quoted, like, this would cost all this to do this. Well, so why would not the FBI just say, go ahead, all right, we'll do this, if you can do that? No, the FBI wants a tool in their possession that they can use quickly, maybe covertly, in a jiffy, to brute force anybody's iPhone password, instead of having to go through the process of going to Apple and say, hey, here's the phone, go through all the stuff you got to do in your SCIF to bypass the information and give us the information. No, the FBI wants to be able to just go in at will and to anybody's phone once they have this.
Yeah, we know that that's what the FBI wants, but you're saying the FBI got a quote from Apple. Apple said, yeah, we can do this. Why didn't the FBI just accept that and get that information and then push to get more?
Because, like I said, the FBI wants Apple to provide them with a tool that they can use quickly and covertly.
No, but that's not what they're saying. They're saying they only want it for this one phone. Why didn't they just accept it for the one phone?
The FBI, clearly the FBI is lying about it, because once it's this one phone, then it'll be another phone, and then it'll just...
I know they're lying, but they don't admit they're lying while they're still asking for the one thing they haven't gotten yet.
When has the FBI ever admitted to lying? Which is like, it's documented through
It sounds like you're saying they are. The thing is, look, if Apple said, yes, we can do this for you, and the FBI wanted this, I don't understand why they wouldn't just say, okay, give that to us, we'll pay you for it, and then after that's done, move on to the next thing, which I agree would be getting access to any phone they want anytime.
I think it's come down to basically a pissing match. FBI wants their software, they want it now to access any phone they want. You know what? I find a lot of parallels between this and the whole CALEA thing, the Communications Act for Law Enforcement Assistance that was passed in late 94. News media agencies were saying all over that this would be an unprecedented step for a company to to cripple their security to provide mm-hmm. access to law enforcement. No, this has been going on for 22 years since CALEA has been the law of the land. The FBI and other law enforcement agencies can directly access central office telephone switches and listen to phone calls.
And we know that they can do that. We know those systems are not secure. That's my problem with this, is that this system is not secure, and we need to admit that. But, Mike, you said that Apple refused to do this.
Yeah, the spec that Bernie's describing is an exhibit in the brief opposing the government. Here, it's not like Apple said, you know, this is how much it will cost, please give us the money.
It's because they're claiming undue burden, actually conscription. I forget which right that is, or but anyway, there's like labor involved, and there are Apple's arguing that they're being conscripted into creating this tool. And so if they can say, look, this is going to take this many engineers, it's basically saying is this involves labor.
That's the part I don't understand. Why would they say it takes this many engineers, this is what it would take, and then say, we're not going to do that? Why not just say, we're not going to do that, or we can't do that? Why give them the particulars as to what it would take?
Because they were trying to use that as an item in their defense, saying, look how much work and how much money it would take us in order to accede to your demands, and this is an undue burden to place on a company. So they're trying to present it in that way, but they're also saying, yes, we can technologically do this. We can feasibly do this if you throw the money, the resources at it, but we still don't want to do this.
Yeah, you see, I think that was their mistake, is saying that. Saying that and admitting that it could be done.
I mean, is your claim that Apple's lawyers are incompetent or that they're dishonest and they want to lose this case?
I don't know about their lawyers. I don't know about their level of competency. What I get from all this is that technically, it's possible to do what the FBI wants to do. Therefore, that technology is not secure and should not be used. We should have something where users have the ability to lock out whoever they want to lock out, and Apple can't do a damn thing about it, and by extension, neither can the FBI. Yeah. We don't have that right now.
Yeah, that characterization is accurate in that, and I also think the whole iCloud backing up, which some people might say is obvious, but that's the one thing in this that is just totally normalized.
I know.
That, like, oh yeah, iCloud is just straight up on the FBI's like desktop or something, whoever.
Yeah, they have something from like an hour beforehand, but that's not enough. They want all of it. I know.
Yeah, it is that and the work of creating this tool being. Oh, I lost my train of thought.
it's not hard to do in situations like this. But here's something to consider. All this talk from the authorities about how they need all this access. They have to have this information. Keep in mind, you know, you just go back a couple of decades, and people didn't have cell phones. They didn't keep all this information there. You had to run an investigation based on what you had in front of you. Pen registers, phone taps, things like that. It wasn't all there laid out for you. So for those people that say we are being victimized by technology, encryption is the enemy, it's a bunch of nonsense, because the amount of information that you do get through social media and through these devices that contain everything, and 9 times out of 10, you are able to get the access that you want because the person isn't clever enough to select the password in the first place. Yeah, you know what? You have it a lot easier now for investigative work, so don't buy that argument.
So what I was going to say is that we can say with confidence that they can break the 9-attempt feature on the passwords of iOS devices, right? I mean, that's
what they have to.
That's what they're asking. The government's asking them to create as a tool, and uh-huh. Apple's saying we don't want to do this, but we can. It'll take 6 engineers, but it's not that. They're saying we can break the encryption. We're saying we can break the 9 attempts and the wiping so that you can continue to try to break the password through brute force.
Yeah, I mean, but they're equivalent, right? Substantially all people have a 4-digit PIN. You can, if you don't have limits, you can try 10,000 PINs in an hour. It's not...
If the FBI gives me one guess, I think I might be able to get it. I have a suspicion. But, you know, how many guesses have they used? Does anybody know? And the other question I had... Well, go ahead.
Well, and that goes back to the technique that was brought up that involves mirroring the device, which Apple said is potentially possible.
That was my other point.
Cloning.
Is it possible to simply copy the phone to another phone, and then you have 10 more guesses?
Kind of like running it in a virtual machine, essentially, having a clone of the OS. And I think Apple responded saying that it's dependent on the state of the RAM, the state of the phone, so on and so forth.
I mean, if we could figure this out, we'd help. We'd help, you know, figure out how you can get into that particular phone, but not for the entire customer base of Apple. That's something Emmanuel, that... Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
On our last broadcast, I brought up that very point, that Apple could very likely clone this phone in its current state and make 100 copies of it so that the FBI could use its agents to sit at tables and, like, manually try every possible PIN after they go through 9 tries on one phone and they go to the next one. But what FBI wants is not only a software tool that will allow them to enter more than 10 PINs without wiping the phone, but they want to be able to have no delay between these brute force attempts. So as Mike said, you could have a computer try all the possible PIN codes in probably less than an hour and go through that. So that's the nature of brute force attempts. So there's a lot of disingenuousness going on here, I think, both with from FBI and Apple, frankly. And this is nothing new. The FBI has been trying to do this with systems for decades, and they're just trying it again.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bernie. There is some mistakes, I think, on both sides and subterfuge of sorts. You know, one thing that was, I think, kind of speaks to what your point that was brought up is that they admitted that the one representative, I think, who was sort of opposing Apple, who was on the second hearing that I watched, was questioned and basically asked about NSA techniques. What kinds of things would NSA do? And basically got this guy to acknowledge that the NSA said, yeah, we actually do have ways, but we can't really help you because if we show you these techniques, then they'll become known.
Good point, yes. Hey, we should involve our listeners in this discussion. I'm sure we might have some other opinions to share. Our phone number, our on-air phone number is 718-780-8888. That's 718-780-8888. I should also point out, though, that we are in the dying breath of a fundraiser, we have... I believe we still have copies of the car hacking book for pledges of $55. If you're interested in learning about how cars are hacked, how they could be hacked, all kinds of things I'm sure the auto industry does not want you to know about, give a call to 212-209-2950, pledge $55 for that, and you'll become extremely educated. You'll frighten your neighbors. 212-209-2950. Keep us on the air. Pledge whatever you can afford. All right, we have a whole bunch of people calling in. I'm sure we have all sorts of ideas here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello. I watched that entire hearing on C-SPAN.org. It's still there for anybody to watch. The smartest congressman was a fella from California named Darrell. I'm not sure if it's Issa or Issa, however he says his name. He seemed to be on Apple's side.
I see.
But he was the one asking about the cloning and yes. all that, FBI request the source code from Apple so that they can create their own bypass to the system. Apparently that didn't happen yet. He also asked, did you ever hear of a shredder company that was asked to provide a way to reassemble the shredding?
Yes.
Now, he was one of the smartest people there.
That is the parallel I was looking for. Yeah, that's a shredder company being asked.
That was a great exchange, and he had him kind of on the ropes there.
He did. Now, he was one of the smartest people there. One of the dumbest was a woman named Del Bene, and she mentioned a scenario that was on the CSI Cyber where somebody remotely hacked a printer and set it on fire.
Oh my God!
I mean, just so stupid. And she really she brought that into the hearing as if it were possible. She really believed it.
This is where the government gets their ideas from CSI Cyber. Think about that.
Exactly. You're 100% correct. But anyway, I urge everybody to watch that. It's on C-SPAN.org, and they're probably running it on C-SPAN again. He was the fellow Darrell Issa or Issa from California was one of the smartest, and there were a couple other people who were pretty good there also. There was a woman, a former Google analyst, seemed to be on Apple's side also. Her name is Susan Landau, and she's a professor now. And she said her take is that the FBI should be concentrating on their surveillance and not asking people to crack things.
Yep.
So She was another good person. Now, the lawyer for Apple, his name is Bruce Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L. They only had one lawyer there. He couldn't handle all that by himself. When I think of the team of lawyers that O.J. had, I mean, Apple could certainly afford better than that. I don't know why they just stuck that one guy there.
Yeah.
And let him out to hang out there to hang, because they're asking him about, well, you want Congress to fix everything. Well, what's your proposals? And he had none. So that kind of put him in the corner. And it goes on and on and on. You know, well, what happened? I can't go through all of them, but I had posted some of my some of the things that I thought were important on the internet. In any event, everybody should watch the cspan.org.
Okay, thanks very much for that pointer. And after this show is over, folks, not before then, go to cspan.org and watch that hearing. Yes, Mike?
I mean, I think the fantasy about the exploding printer, while a fantasy, only goes to the point that we need to improve the security of all these devices, and government orders to weaken the security, which is already too weak, is precisely not what we need.
Well, I think the first step in that is to make sure that it's clear that that is what they are asking for, that they are asking to weaken security, not simply to get access to one particular phone. And that's something they have not really been forthcoming with. But those of us who have any understanding of the technology knows that's exactly what it's going to lead to. Now, we were talking about Apple having support from various entities. This is interesting. There was a panel of cryptographic luminaries at the RSA conference, and guess who did not support Apple? The co-inventor of the RSA algorithm, Adi Shamir.
Mr. S.
Yes. In my opinion, he said, Apple goofed. It is the case of a single phone. It can set precedents, but if you look at the issue, it falls on the side of helping the FBI in this case. My advice is they should have complied this time and waited for a better test case. What do you guys think of that?
I think this is turning out to be a better test case than imagined. Let's be clear that Apple's move here has to be not to play at all, because if they don't want to be in the business of deciding on a case by case basis, one of the points Apple made in its brief, and I really hate that I'm agreeing with such a large corporation which does so much else wrong, but on this I think they're pretty right, and they point out that this case is being litigated in the press before it is being litigated in the courts, or simultaneously at the very least. If the FBI seriously thought that there was any even minuscule chance of the data on this phone leading to another co-conspirator, they would not make such a public deal about this. They would not want to tip that person off. But the shooter in this case destroyed all his personal phones. This is the work phone. It seems to be fairly clear that there just aren't any co-conspirators to be found. The government is using this as a test case because they can call it terrorism, and they hope that will get them whatever they want, and then they can go use it in more ordinary cases, in the so-called war on drugs and stuff like that.
I'm not sure how we can say for sure there's no other co-conspirators. There could be. We don't know. It's not.
We can't say for sure, yeah. But it seems fairly clear at this point that the likelihood is quite small.
All right. Well, I don't know enough about the case to say one way or the other, but I do know that this would set a bad precedent if it were something that was just accepted. And I also don't know, was the FBI the one that went public with this, or was it Apple that went public with this? Because maybe the FBI did want to keep this quiet.
If the FBI wanted to keep it quiet, they would file the motions under seal. They can keep it quiet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't. The director of the FBI wrote blog posts about it and all this stuff.
And Emmanuel?
Yes.
If this was really about national security, which it clearly isn't because the suspects are dead at this point, the FBI, as Mike points out, they could have gone to the FISA, the Foreign the FISC, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They could have gone secretly to this court, and Apple would not have been able to and gotten an order, and Apple would not have been able to say anything about it. They could have got a national security letter from the FBI saying you can't talk about it and you have to comply with this order. And who knows how often that happens with other companies behind closed doors.
Well, that's precisely the point I was making before, is that it could happen and we would not know about it. Hey, maybe it's already happened and they just didn't tell the FBI about it. Who knows? But if they can do it secretly, that means it's pretty much done, because they will do it secretly at some point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take another phone call. 718-780-8888. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Turn down your radio, please.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Here, let me turn it.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Here, let me get the other one. Yeah, okay, I'm on.
Go ahead.
I'm on the radio.
Yes,
right
you're
now.
On the radio, but not for much longer.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to say is that the leans on big countries with huge militaries and say, we want this, and you're going to give it to us, and they comply. The government is like the mafia on steroids. If they want that information, if they want Apple to comply, they just say, well, you got $100 billion offshore. We're going to tap into that.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple would dance to any tune the government wanted. So this, to me, is just a kabuki dance. They're just trying to look good. Apple's trying to look like it's serving its customers. But they've probably either already given that information off or they're doing some kind of dance where they're saying there's information that they got and they can't actually go after those people that they've or leads or actually go after and catch somebody unless they say they got that information off the phone. They probably already have it.
So you think this is more? You think this is more like a market test, you know, to see how it plays with their customer base?
Yeah, I heard that Apple was saying, "Yeah, we'll get you stuff," and then when it became public, then they started going, "Oh no, we're not going to do that," you know.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got too. That had it not gotten so public, they wouldn't have looked at it in that particular way and said, "How can we make our image as good as possible and protect our customers?" How is it playing though with the populace overall? My impression is that a lot of people seem to think that Apple should be just giving the FBI whatever it wants. But then, you know, what a lot of people are voting for these days.
Yeah, but do a lot of people realize that 70% of the intelligence community is private now? And there's a lot of jerk-offs, you know, that are actually watching private information right now, laughing about people's nude photos that they're catching online that they're sneaking into. These guys are just regular hacks, man. They're not hackers, but just regular people that have access to all kinds of information. That's what Snowden showed us. And it's out of control. There's no privacy there. There's not even a government regulation behind it. You just have these companies, and they're just, it's like the Wild West out there. So you get their information over to them, good luck. There's some guy out there that you teed off, you got his girlfriend, and he's going to say, oh, now I can get even with you 20 years ago, and he can start screwing up your life. Let me tell you something. This is bad news.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Thanks for that call, and we're going to try and take another phone call. Any comments on what we heard so far?
I mean, I think, again, it just goes to the point we need more security rather than less.
Yeah. Well, who's arguing for less security? The FBI, right?
FBI,
that's
yeah.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, and they're powerful allies.
Yeah. All right. 718-780-8888. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yes. Can you advise me how to get an antivirus for an Android tablet?
Okay, you're listening to the wrong show. The personal computer show will be on next week at this time. All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Speak up.
Okay. What I'd like to say is, apart from listening to CNN and Daryl Issa, who can we contact to vent our frustrations where something would get done?
That's the question of the ages, isn't it? Who will listen? Bernie, any ideas on this?
By the way, let me add in another bullet point, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was reported the day after the attacks by these two terrorists that Apple changed their security plan or system on some level. This was reported by Alex Jones. Maybe you guys can give an update to this or an answer to this.
Well, yeah, you saved us some time, but we can look into that. Bernie, any idea on who he can contact?
I kept hearing touch tones in between his question. What was his question?
Who will listen? How can you contact somebody that might actually do something about this and take our concerns seriously?
Well, obviously, if Apple already is on our side, pretty much, or vice versa. So you would have to contact someone in the government. All I could suggest is you write to your legislators, whether they really will care or not. I don't know. Your U.S. senators, your congresspeople, write to them. Because, I think really they care more about keeping their jobs than they do about the security issue, frankly. And if they diss too many of their constituents, they know that the gravy train's over and they're not going to be able to play in the sandbox anymore.
I think locally, Hakeem Jeffries was participating in this. He's a congressperson for Brooklyn here. So
okay, all right. So
somebody who might know about it.
Somebody that might actually listen. Thanks thanks for that phone call. We can probably take another one or two, 718-780-8888. But does anyone here have anything to add?
I mean, in addition to the good advice that Kyle and Bernie gave, you can always follow the EFF for action alerts and stuff like that.
And the ACLU, too. In fact, they filed an amicus brief today, I believe, defending Apple. They say the stakes of the fight between Apple and the FBI could not be higher for digital security and privacy. If the government has its way, then it will have won the authority to turn American tech companies against their customers and, in the process, undercut decades of advances in our security and privacy. So, yeah, we need more security that prevents them from doing things like this, not less. And I think maybe this is a tactic on their behalf to ensure that we don't move any further in the direction that we want to go in, more so than it is an attempt to get access to this one particular phone. I think they're scared of losing control. They're scared of losing access to this particular aspect of our private lives. So that's.
I mean, it goes beyond our private lives. These phones, as I was reading, I wish I could remember who wrote it in an article today, argued pretty convincingly, these devices have become literally an extension of our minds. Which government has never had access before to our minds, and that is, you know, something that I wish to prevent them from having.
Yeah, it's the importance of this stuff is critical, and like that came up in the hearing. It was mentioned that these things are phones are becoming a platform for authentication. They're becoming wallets. They're becoming full of accounts and access to various parts of our life and platforms. And so it's a hugely important issue to protect these things.
Nice going, guys. We had a bunch of calls, and they all went out into Neverland. They're still ringing, but we can't get to them. I'm sorry, folks, I called in. Anyone who calls in the next 30 seconds, we'll get you on. 718-780-8888. And if you have a phone ringing now, we don't know where you are because that's the way our system is set up. It just transfers someplace, and we can't get to it anymore. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. Oh, they're back. Okay, let's see if we can get one of these. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Make it quick.
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, what's on your mind? Turn your phone down. Turn your radio down, right?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Please, go ahead.
Yes. My concern is that, you know, unless us as the people, you know, do something about it and all get together and put a stop to it, it's never going to stop. I mean,
mm-hmm.
all these choices that we make, you know, we could talk about it and everybody could keep talking about it, but nobody actually groups together and makes the difference.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I think a lot of people do group together, but we have to be louder and we have to maintain a sustained attack on this kind of a thing and educate people, let them know why this is important and why it's something that benefits them. Hey, we're out of time. I know, Rob, you have something to remind the folks about.
Yep. Speaking of grouping together, 2600 meetings happening all over the world. 2600.com/meetings. Find one near you or start one near you.
www.2600.com/meetings. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be back next week, I believe. WBAI New York. Good night. Yeah, there's no one left to torture. Culture. Yeah, yeah.
National Working Women's Day at WBAI will broadcast on Tuesday, March 8th from 6 a.m. till midnight. Please tune in to hear our poignant stories about work, family, play, healing, politics, love, and so much more. If you want to get involved in the day, if you have something to share, send your proposal to iwwd@wbai.org. And please tune in to WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM and wbai.org on Tuesday, March 8th. From 6 a.m. till midnight for WBAI Radio's International Working Women's Day celebration.
Along to the beat of the drum. Someday soon, you're gonna wake up singing. Battle is over, but the war go on. Everybody plays, follow the leader. What if the leader has a gun? Remember when you jump to the 8 o'clock whistle? Battle is over, but the war go on.
I love that line. It's only through love the whole world can stay alive. My name is Tony Bates. I am in studio with your very own Catherine Davis. And we are going to look at everyone's finances this afternoon. You know, in that song we were just listening to, Kathy, that was Sonny and Brownie, by the way. And the song is called The Battle Is Over, But the War Goes On. And in that song, he says, if talk was money, you'd be a millionaire. And certainly you and I have been talking for a living for some time now. We would certainly be millionaires, but that hasn't panned out.
Not yet.
Not yet. As yet, I should say. Yeah. So this afternoon, we're going to welcome our guest, Loyan Mensa. And we're going to talk to you about our finances. And Kathy, as you and I have been having conversations about this premium and these ideas, we've talked about the idea that so many in our community have spent so much time working to save everything, to save forests, to save children, to save whales, to save WBAI, to save whatever it is. But we have very little focused our attention on saving money.
And or often, saving ourselves.
Or saving ourselves. And as we begin to learn, as I become wiser, I understand that where you focus is where your energy goes. And so in order to be financially stable, one must focus their energy very directly in that direction. And we're going to talk about that with Loyan Mensa this afternoon.
That's right. And I want to welcome you back, Loyan Mensa, to WBAI. And people may have heard you on the air before, and they know that you have a real dedication to helping people to straighten out their finances and make a plan for their life. And you have a lot of experience with this. You've worked on Wall Street. But why don't we start by reminding those who may have heard and letting people know, really, what is your mission and how does that relate to your growing up and learning how to find your own way in the world?
Hi, Kathy. Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on the show again. And I definitely appreciate you starting off that way, because everything I do is predicated on where I began. And it began, you know, humble beginnings, you know, growing up in inner city South Bronx. I was raised by a single mom. She raised me and my three siblings. And she always shared with us, we shouldn't focus on our current circumstances. We should focus on where we want to be. And she was a direct representation of really practicing the law of attraction before I even knew what it was. You know, she sacrificed a lot. She made sure that, you know, we were taken care of. And for me, I focused on, you know, being in a position of success. And success for me meant being able to help other people. So working hard, going through school, you know, graduating with an accounting degree, starting off my career in accounting, then starting my own investment firm, and then transitioning to full-time on Wall Street for one of the largest investment banks in the world, and then learning everything I need to learn there from the standpoint of what wealthy people know and what most of mid-America doesn't know, taking all that information and then being in a position where I opened up my own office on Wall Street to be able to be in a position to educate middle America on areas where they can either create a legacy, leave a legacy, or build wealth for their future and for their loved ones. And I'm in a position now where between myself and my colleagues are able to, you know, transform people's lives through inspiration, motivation, and education on the area of wealth. And what that means.
Beautiful. And we are actually offering people an opportunity to have a one-hour personal financial checkup or consultation with your organization, either with yourself or one of your colleagues, depending on how the schedule goes. But maybe let's start by letting people know what they'll be able to learn through this financial checkup, a general idea at first.
Absolutely. I mean, it really comes down to understanding where they want to be, right? A lot of individuals don't have a financial independence number or don't know what it is for them. Now, a financial independence number is the number that, let's say, for instance, for everyone that's listening, if you had all the money you ever needed, so that paid off all your bills and paid off all your current expenses, plus all the money you ever wanted, what would that number be? And whatever that number is your financial independence number. That's going to allow you to have the lifestyle that you really want to live and also be able to, let's say, be fulfilled with everything that you want to do. So my job is to help people dream again. You know, I've learned that, you know, a lot of individuals after the age of 4 or 5, they stop dreaming. Right, there was a quote where someone said that individuals die at the age of 18 and are buried at the age of 80.
Wow.
And what I learned is that when they say they die at the age of 18, it's not a physical death, their dreams die. And then they physically die around the age of 80 or so. So my main responsibility is to help individuals dream again. Help people find that passion that they once did, that they lost because they said that the world got to them or life is just, it is what it is. Help them dream again. Help them be able to touch what they once wanted, but be able to realize that it can become tangible if they so far seek it. And then my job is to help them dream and then take a current snapshot of where they are financially, from income to expenses to debts to everything. Take a full financial snapshot of where they are today and then build a roadmap of how to help them close the gap between where they are currently and where they want to be in the future financially.
That's really wonderful. And I think one of the things that is very powerful about what you're saying is because once people really begin to take stock of themselves and really understand what's possible, then they not only start to dream again, but they're able to make tangible contribution either to their family or even to their projects in the world. Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. You see, dreaming allows people to begin to have awareness again of what is possible. But the beautiful thing about dreaming is you don't just dream when you go to sleep. When you realize your dreams are goals and they become tangible, you dream when you wake up.
Wow. Well, that is so true, because that is how things are created. Where on the premium that we're offering people is a financial checkup. It's a pledge of $100. You can call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950 for the financial checkup plus the secret DVD, which also comes with this premium. And it's really a wonderful opportunity to help WBAI, but also to make a real difference for yourself as we are coming into that time of year when people make all kinds of promises to themselves and what they're going to be doing. People set goals and make lists of what they can do to make the new year better, or to, as they're going forward in their lives, to really make a change. But very often people don't get past the list stage. So I know that your financial checkup really gives them a roadmap. What would you say about the way people are thinking? How important is it, in addition to having that plan, for people to pay attention to what they believe about themselves or what they believe about money?
I appreciate you asking that question. I personally believe that thoughts are things. Thoughts create everything. So what I mean is everything starts with a thought. Now, thoughts birth feelings or emotions. Feelings birth actions, and actions birth results. So if someone looks at their current situation or current circumstance, and they want to change their current situation or current circumstance, which is the result of certain things, they have to first change their current action. Now, in order to change their current action, they have to change how they feel about their life. In order to change how they feel about their life, they have to guard their thoughts regarding their life.
Yes, very powerful. I totally agree with that. And very often, it's the attitudes that we hold that create roadblocks, even if we have the best of intentions and are making these plans for our future. If someone told us somewhere along the line that, you know, money is the root of all evil, and if you're an activist, you're not going to have a sense that you want money, or some people grow up learning that they don't deserve certain things, they're not good enough. And so there's a lot of attitudes that people can get caught up in that will change their dynamic, Tony.
And, you know, looking back at our history, Kathy, my father used to tell me that he lost his religion young because he had questions they couldn't answer. But he was taught that when he asked why black people have to live in such poverty, he was told, don't worry, you'll get your reward in heaven. You don't need it now. Just wait to the next life. And there are many of us who were taught that as children, or at least from his generation, who grew up with those things. We don't need to worry about money because that will all be taken care of in the wash. That's an attitude that pervades our community particularly. Mm-hmm. And so it strikes me what Loyon is saying, what you think about money. And we're not talking about the stuff that's in the front of your mind, folks. We're talking about those deeply held beliefs, how you feel about money. That's the important thing. And along with this book, The Secret, or this DVD, The Secret, it will begin to really lay out how important it is to understand how you feel and to direct your feelings. And from your earliest comments, Loyon, I was struck by the idea that you said most people don't even have a number of what would get them free. That's the starting point. You have to have an idea that you can be free from that rat race and a goal to work toward. within the context of that number. And the second thing that you brought up is what we're talking about now. How do you think about money? How do you feel about money? It is so important, but you have to have something that